I'm just mad about saffron. She's just mad about me. They call me mellow yellow, quite rightly. They call me mellow yellow.
Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is April 30th, 2021, and I'm your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is The NNT is Mellow Yellow for TPA in Acute Ischemic Stroke. And our guest skeptic is Dr. Justin Morgenstern. He is an emergency physician and the creator of the excellent FOMED project called First 10 EM. He is also one of the SGEM hot off the press faculty. Welcome back to the SGEM, Justin.
It's absolutely a pleasure, Ken, as always, especially talking about one of my favorite subjects.
But you have some big, big news.
Yeah, you know, I'm actually taking a break from my paternity leave to record this with you. I wouldn't make that exception for just anyone, but for you, Ken, especially for this topic, I got the stamp of approval from my newest little skeptic, Theo, and he's promised to try not to cry too much during this recording, but we'll see about that.
Well, congratulations on Theo. I hope everybody's doing well at home and you're settling in. I know that the nights with a newborn can be long.
But we're emergency docs, so I think we got it, right?
We're used to any time for anything. But this is an SGEM Extra, and it's based on the new recommendation on the NNT website for TPA in acute ischemic stroke. In fact, it is the third time there has been a recommendation on this topic. Is third time the charm? Or are we talking three strikes and you're out, Justin?
Probably neither, Ken. So the first review gave thrombolytics a red color recommendation, no benefit. And then the second review gave alteplase as a single agent a green color recommendation where benefits outweighed harms. Since no relevant trials were published between the two, both author groups were examining essentially the same data and arriving at completely opposing conclusions. So we tackled this wanting to try to understand and try to explain these conflicting interpretations.
So our interpretation of the available literature was to give thrombolytics for acute ischemic stroke a yellow recommendation, which, according to the NNT, the net benefits and harms unclear due to uncertainty in the data. This has resulted in the summary statistic of the benefit, the NNT for benefit, not reported or uncertain, and the NNT reported for harms also uncertain. And I'll put that summary statistic in the blog.
Now, again, this is the third time the NNT has tackled this topic, and each time the conclusion is different. It would obviously be hubris to presume that our summary would arrive at the one true answer. But our goal wasn't really to provide an answer. Our goal was simply to explain the science as well as we could so that people could understand why there's a debate and why, and try to understand the uncertainty that underlies that debate.
And so what reference did we pick for this review?
So the basics of the review is Donaldson et al. Why is there still a debate regarding the safety and efficacy of intravenous thrombolysis in the management of presumed acute ischemic stroke, a systematic review and meta-analysis from the Emergency Medicine Australasia Journal back in 2016.
And this is not a standard SGEM critical appraisal, but let's run through some of the key parts of a systematic review. What was the study population that they were looking at or included in this?
So they identified 26 randomized trials that include 10,431 patients, and these are trials comparing intravenous thrombolysis with placebo or standard care in acute ischemic stroke.
And what did they have as their primary efficacy outcome?
So they looked at a good functional outcome defined as a modified Rankin score of 3 or less, i.e. some residual disability requiring assistance, but able to walk and care for personal needs independently.
And Justin, you know, we can't just consider one side of the coin and look at efficacy. We must look at the other side of the coin and consider the potential harms to any therapy. What were the harm endpoints?
So obviously they looked at symptomatic intracranial hemorrhage as defined by the individual trials, and we'll come back to that one, and maybe the most important harm, overall mortality.
And what were the key results that Donaldson et al. Reported?
So they report a 3.2% improvement in good neurologic outcome, a 5.4% increase in symptomatic intracranial hemorrhage, and a 2.5% increase in mortality. However, we question the certainty that is implied by these summary numbers.
And how did these results from Donaldson et al. Compare to the previous systematic review and meta-analysis by Emberson et al.?
Yeah, so Emberson and colleagues reported only on autoplays, which is a problem we're going to discuss a little bit further, and found that there was a 5% improvement in neurologic outcomes, a 5.5% increase in intracranial hemorrhage, and a 1.4% increase in 90-day mortality, which wasn't statistically significant, but so basically pretty comparable numbers.
And what you've given there is the absolute numbers, not relative risk, correct?
Correct.
There was also a 2014 Cochrane review on this issue.
Yeah, so that was by Wardlaw et al., and they basically have similar conclusions with a significant improvement in neurologic outcomes, increased intracranial hemorrhage, and increased mortality. So overall, our conclusions and our discussion are really unchanged by which systematic review we chose, and they really just reflect our belief that the pooling of the data on this topic is overly simplistic and tends to mask some profound uncertainty in the data.
And I've put together a table summarizing these three systematic reviews, giving the number of patients they included, the number of studies they included, what the primary outcome was, what the harms were, and I'll put that table in the show notes.
Now, I'll say I absolutely love the NNT website and the NNT as a concept. I was thrilled to be invited to be an author, but there are some problems with the NNT if we use it in isolation. One of the great conceptual difficulties with any summary statistic, something like the NNT, is the implication of certainty. Now, a major strength of the NNT is its simplicity. It can help us make complex research easier to understand. On the other hand, a major weakness is also its simplicity because it can hide complexity in that research. It can ignore confidence intervals and it can obscure biases in the research. For most topics, these details are far more important than any individual number.
And I, too, am a fan of the NNT website and have used it extensively in teaching of residents and go to it quite often. But like you said, it doesn't capture some of the nuance, but I do like its simplicity. And we actually did an SGEM extra on some of the limitations of the NNT summary statistic called the NNT wet or dry. And it was based on an article published in AEM by Reeves and Reynolds in December 2019. But let's get back to talking about this review. We were talking about sources of uncertainty around thrombolytics and stroke. And there are multiple sources which we discussed in the NNT recommendation. And the first source of uncertainty we highlighted was the conflicting individual trial results.
Yeah, so among 26 RCTs included in the systematic review, 24 of the research groups found no benefit in their selected primary outcome. The two that did claim a benefit, that's NINS Part 2 and ECAS 3, both had baseline imbalances that might explain that difference. In fact, there are reanalyses that adjust for those baseline imbalances for both trials, and in those reanalyses, the benefits disappear. However, to complicate things, there are other reanalyses of NINS 2, and in that reanalysis, the benefit is maintained, so that adds to the overall uncertainty here.
And we reviewed the NINS trial with Dr. Swaminathan back on SGEM number 70, and more recently, Professor Fadovich and I reviewed the reanalysis of ECAS 3 that was published by Dr. Brian Alper on SGEM number 297. But let's get back to another source of uncertainty, and that is the clinical heterogeneity of individual trials.
Yeah, so these 26 trials are pretty different clinically. That's what we mean by heterogeneous. So they enrolled stroke patients of differing demographics. They use different treatment times, different stroke severities, different anatomic territories, and different thrombolytic agents. A position that is probably supported by the major differences in conclusions that one can get to depending on which study you decide to focus on.
There was also selective emphasis on trials claiming benefit.
Yeah, so this is problematic. It's circular and erroneous logic to claim efficacy for thrombolytics based only on the trial characteristics of the two positive trials. I mean, first of all, there is some legitimate debate about whether those two trials were actually positive. But second, selectively highlighting positive results is a form of the Texas sharpshooter fallacy.
Yeah, the Texas sharpshooter fallacy is committed when you cherry pick a data cluster to suit your argument or found a pattern to fit a presumption. It comes from the concept of a marksman taking a gun and shooting at the side of a barn. After firing a number of shots, the marksman goes up to the barn and draws a big target around the spot where there are the most bullet holes. That's the Texas sharpshooter fallacy.
Definitely sounds like a strategy I would have used as a kid. Now, in the stroke literature, for example, because both NINS 2 and ECAS 3 used alteplase specifically, some have suggested that alteplase is a superior agent. However, on closer inspection, that logic falters. Few trials have actually compared thrombolytic agents head-to-head, so there's no strong evidence to support that claim. There are 9 additional trials of alteplase that are negative, and systematic reviews consistently find that there's no heterogeneity of effect between agents. In other words, statistically speaking, the different thrombolytic agents all look the same. Moreover, in evaluating drug efficacy, generally you have to establish a class effect before you can even have a debate about comparing individual agents. Therefore, while it increases the overall complexity of this argument, we believe that it's a mistake to exclusively examine data from just the agent used in the two trials that claimed a benefit. You can't just retrospectively decide to throw out all the trials that you don't agree with.
Well, likewise, while there are theoretical reasons to think earlier treatment is better, this has not been directly tested. So people who aren't randomized to getting a thrombolytic early or late, neither Donaldson nor the Cochrane review find an interaction between time to treatment and effect. IST3, which is the largest placebo-controlled randomized trial of thrombolytics for stroke, and they used tPA in that trial, they found better outcomes among patients treated after 4.5 hours than patients treated between 3 and 4.5 hours from onset of stroke symptoms. Again, we feel it's best to consider this literature as a whole, rather than using time windows selectively based on outlying or positive trials. Another source of uncertainty was individual trial bias.
Yeah, bias is a major source of uncertainty in all scientific research. Hopefully everybody who listens to the SGEM knows that. Importantly, using the GRADE tool, Donaldson and colleagues rate the risk of bias as serious for all outcomes they looked at. One notable source of bias in these trials is the outcome scales used, such as the modified Rankin scale. This score is known to have some subjectivity and poor inter-rater reliability, as well as questionable validity, which makes it a problematic primary outcome measure.
Yeah, when trained neurologists examine the same patient, there is substantial variability in the modified Rankin scale score assignments. Compounding the problem, some trials assessed patients by phone or mail, a choice certain to increase variability and imprecision. For example, in the IST trial that I mentioned earlier, and it contributes nearly 40% of the subjects to the Donaldson et al. Meta-analysis, results were obtained using telephone and mail follow-up, and it was a non-blinded trial.
Yeah, and so that subjectivity, especially in a non-blinded trial, is very important, especially because removing IST3 from the pooled meta-analysis here removes the statistical finding of benefit.
Well, something I've spoken about before on the SGEM is when you stop trials early, this can introduce bias as well. And that bias of stopping trials early can be compounded if you put it together in a systematic review and meta-analysis.
Yeah, and that's because larger trials are weighted more heavily in a meta-analysis. So early termination, which reduces trial size, can significantly affect the results here. There were 5 thrombolytic trials that were stopped early because of harm or futility. Together, these would have added more than 2,000 additional participants who, had they been included, might have neutralized or even reversed the findings from the two small trials claiming benefit, NINS2 and ECAS3, which combined only had 1,400 patients.
Well, since we're talking about N's and numbers of patients included in trial, while over 10,000 participants were enrolled in stroke trials, some individual trials for acute myocardial infarctions enrolled far more patients, and in aggregate, those trials included more than 60,000 patients. The comparatively small numbers of participants in stroke trials means chance findings like baseline imbalances are both more likely and more influential, furthering uncertainty. But I mentioned this earlier, we can't just consider the potential efficacy of a treatment modality, we must also consider the potential harms.
Yeah, in contrast to the rather heterogeneous and uncertain data on benefits, the data on harms is far more certain. The exact numbers will vary based on what definitions you use and whether one decides to focus on fatal or symptomatic or any hemorrhage, but an increase in intracranial hemorrhage is certain. More importantly, there's also an increase in mortality with thrombolytics.
Yeah, if there's something that I'm certain about the stroke literature, it's that if you give patients who are having a stroke a thrombolytic, they're more likely to bleed. Now, prior NNT summaries directly compared the number of patients with intracranial hemorrhage to the number with good neurologic outcome. But that can be misleading, though. Any harms due to intracranial hemorrhage are incorporated into a final neurologic outcome assessment, and therefore good functional outcome is far more important than intracranial hemorrhage.
Now, on the other hand, there's a pretty difficult comparison to consider between the chance of a neurologic benefit here and the increased risk of death. Thrombolytics appear to increase mortality. However, many patients might be willing to accept that risk if there's an increased chance of functional improvement. Shared decision-making around this already very difficult decision is going to be made even harder by the fact that although the mortality harm is pretty certain, the benefit is very uncertain.
Last but not least, the financial conflicts of interest can contribute to the uncertainty of the evidence.
Yeah, unfortunately, this is a big problem in medicine. Financial conflicts of interest are very common in all medical research. Although they don't always invalidate findings, they complicate interpretation because studies with financial conflicts are more likely to report positive findings. Such conflicts are well documented in both the original thrombolysis research as well as subsequent guidelines and are known to affect the quality and conclusions of systematic reviews. This may be an unconscious contributor to the divergent conclusions that we see on this topic.
Well, like all work, our summary has inherent limitations. Not included in this review, for instance, are the newer trials, the wake-up trials, using advanced imaging to select patients for thrombolysis. Trials we felt should not be combined with studies using thrombolytics based largely on clinical criteria.
Another interesting thing is that the Donaldson review uses a different cutoff on the Modafinil Rankin score than other trials. They looked at less than or equal to 3. The authors argue that being able to walk and care for oneself independently is the threshold that most of us would consider a good outcome. So now, although this cutoff seems unconventional, the other reviews find similar harms and similar benefits using different cutoffs, suggesting that the cutoff's points are not an important differentiator of conclusions.
The uncertainty in these data may help explain differing views of thrombolysis for stroke. Trials are heterogeneous with many sources of bias. Rare positive findings are marred by baseline imbalances, but continue to have outsized influence. Outcomes were assessed using imprecise, subjective scales. Early termination tilt the data. Outcomes are overlapping, and conflicts abound. There is no simple summary. We find the only appropriate conclusion is uncertainty.
Yeah, we were faced with a pretty big problem when we sat down to write this paper. Summaries of the literature just can't answer questions that the literature itself can't answer. Thrombolytics for stroke has been among the most debated topics in medicine for 3 decades now, which tells you that the data is just not strong enough to be certain in either direction. This Donaldson et al. Meta-analysis suggests a potential functional outcome benefit, which must be balanced against an increased mortality. However, the authors warn us that the findings are at serious risk of bias, and pooling results introduces more bias. 3 NNT summaries have now arrived at 3 different conclusions. This question will not be answered by just reanalyzing the same old data.
In the meantime, it's difficult to offer clear guidance. Clinicians need to be aware of the weaknesses in these data, and patients deserve to know as well. We believe the data are not compelling enough for specific recommendations. Shared decision-making is essential, and physicians are left with a difficult task, guiding patients through a decision without a clear answer.
At the end of the day, we need additional, carefully executed trials to provide us with better information to guide our care. After all, replication is the key to science.
Unfortunately, there are some who feel that the, quote, era of RCTs of IV TPA as a standalone therapy in acute ischemic stroke has now likely come to a close, end of quote. This statement, Justin, is from a presentation at the recent International Stroke Conference. The presenter went on to say it would be, quote, unethical to randomize to placebo therapy, end quote.
Hopefully, our review helps people understand why we feel that that conclusion is incorrect. The vast majority of trials on this topic have been negative, and there are serious questions about the 2 positive trials. The data on harms is clear. Thrombolytics increase mortality.
So with a drug that has pretty clear harm, you know, there's an increase in mortality here, you have to be very certain that there's enough benefit to justify that risk. Replication is the core of science, and you know, neither positive trial has been replicated. If anything, the bulk of the evidence seems to point towards harm. There's clearly a need for follow-up RCTs. In fact, I might argue that it could be considered unethical to continue using this drug without getting that follow-up research that can confirm whether there is actually any benefit to outweigh the known harms.
Well, this individual also called Professor Fadovich and me, quote, non-expert EM contrarians. I guess it all depends on what definition of expert they are using. Now, neither of us are stroke neurologists, but we are both EM physicians. Dr. Fadovich has a PhD and is the head of the Center for Clinical Research in Emergency Medicine within Harry Perkins Institute of Medical Research. Well, I have an MSc in physiology, and I've been doing medical research for 37 years now.
Yeah, I was a little surprised by that slide. I guess, how do you respond to such a statement being made at an international medical conference?
One thing I did was I checked out who the physicians were listed on the presentation, and I noted that one of them was an EM physician named Dr. Jordan Bonomo. I reached out to Jordan to clarify the meaning of the comment, and he was really good about it. He wasn't aware of us being called, quote, non-experts, and that being listed on the slide. He also acknowledged that it was unprofessional and apologized, so it was really good.
Yeah, I think that's a good response. I mean, listen, emotions often run high when we debate things that we really care about. But I think one thing that we have to keep in mind is that we really all have the same goal in mind, right? We all care about the best care for our patients. Personally, I love hyperbolic language. I've always been a little tongue-in-cheek at conferences, but we really want to be careful to stay professional because at the end of the day, again, we're all on the same team. We all want the same things.
Yeah, we're all on team patient. And so I reached out and spoke to Dr. Jeff Saver. He was the senior author, to inquire about the comment. And Jeff said it was his comment and his comment alone. It did not come from Dr. Bonomo or his fellow. It was his language, his text on the slide. And he was trying to indicate that Daniel Fadovich and I are not stroke neurologists. And it would have been clearer just to refer to us as non-stroke neurologists, EM contrarians, rather than non-experts. Now, Jeff did acknowledge that we are both experts at methodology, and we had a very good conversation affirming our common ground of wanting stroke patients to get the best care. Justin, we're actually thinking about making t-shirts with our new titles printed on the front. And both Dr. Saver and Dr. Bonomo have requested a t-shirt.
I absolutely love that. Both that people are willing to accept that they may have made mistakes, and also that you're willing to take those comments with such a good sense of humor. I definitely want a t-shirt as well. Now, perhaps unsurprisingly, I think you and Dr. Fadovich both received some pushback from two employees at Genentech as well.
Yeah, the actual reference that they used for the non-expert EM contrarians, they had a little asterisk there, and they referenced in their background slide, it was an article that Dr. Fadovich and I had written for ASEP Now. And it was on the reanalysis of ECAS3 by Alper et al. This resulted in a letter being sent from two Genentech physicians pointing out some of our concerns, and this letter was published with our response in the current ASEP Now.
We probably don't have to go too far into that. We've already touched on financial conflicts of interest above. I personally like to get my science from independent sources.
Well, there are other SGM episodes on the issues of thrombolytics and stroke. This is not the first time I've covered this, Justin. And there's articles I've written on the subject, and I'll put a list in the show notes. Anything else you want to say before signing off on this topic and getting back to Theo?
Yeah, you know, I could probably rant all day long on this. You know, I know that there are a lot of people out there that find this topic very frustrating. It's been 25 years now, and we're still repeating the same debate over and over again. I think there's two sides of this we should touch on. There's the research side and the clinical side. From a research side, this topic is not going to be settled until we get follow-up RCTs. The RCTs are desperately needed.
We agree with Donaldson's conclusion that further randomized control trials are urgently needed. While we both work in community hospitals and don't really have the resources to conduct such a trial, we both would be very happy to contribute to a new randomized control trial.
Absolutely. And then there's the clinical side of this. I know, again, that people get pretty frustrated, and sometimes they maybe even tune this out. But I think this is a really important topic. But this discussion about how to clinically apply the evidence is really important. The fundamental reason that we all show up to work every day is our patients. Unfortunately, this is a topic where there isn't a clear answer. However, our patients deserve to know about this, and so we all have to be absolute experts in this evidence for thrombolytics for acute ischemic stroke.
Well, thanks, Justin. I really do appreciate you being the guest skeptic on this SGEM Extra, our new mellow yellow NNT recommendation.
It was an absolute pleasure, and thank you so much for joining me as a co-author on the NNT article. And thanks again to the NNT group for inviting us to summarize this data for them.
The SGEM will be back next episode doing a structured critical appraisal of a recent publication, trying to cut that KT window down from over 10 years to less than 1 year using the power of social media, so patients do get the best care based on the best evidence. Justin, can you read the SGEM tagline?
Yeah. Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine, eh?
Talk to everyone next week. We'll